I'm Emily White. This is the third session on Inner Journeys. Are dreams really a path to wisdom? When you ask a rhetorical question, you know the answer is going to be yes. I don't know how many of you have purchased this book, but not all of it is easy to read, but some of it I want to read to you, if you don't mind, since he says it better than I could. In order to deal with the topic of dreams and their meaning, it is necessary to deal with the question of our knowledge of God. Can men and women experience God and the realm of the spirit? If it is absurd to believe that humans can be reached and touched by the dynamism that lies at the heart of the universe, then dreams have little or no religious meaning. Then dreams may be at most a help in unraveling the tangled web of one's personal life. But they have little or no meaning beyond this if we believe that we can't be touched by God. If, however, we're open to this other dimension, then dreams may be one of the most common avenues through which God, the Holy Spirit, can reach out to us, and then dreams should be taken very seriously. And once we have been so touched, we know that the universe does make sense, that our lives do hold a place in it. Then we may attempt without fear and even with new power to go out into the world and find that doors open in strange and unusual ways. Another time I talked about synchronicity, when things happen in unusual ways and we see that things are connected. I will show, says Kelsey, that most major religions have emphasized people can personally experience God. And among the shamans and medicine men, we are confronted with an unheard of power, and that nearly overpowers them. These men and women are amazing healers who mediate these strange unknown powers. In earlier times, humans believed that only the most solid and strongest people, the prophets, could be approached by the living God. The Old Testament says it is a terrifying thing to fall into the hands of God. The greatest and most unusual thing, however, about Christianity is that it allows any person to stand before God without fear. But why then has the modern church ceased to be a channel for humankind to experience the power of Christ through dreams? Why have the church by and large disregarded dreams? The answer seems to be that the philosophies of the past 300 years have overlooked the fact that God wants to come in contact with men, and that they can, men and women, and that they can actually know God. A division has arose between the church, who didn't want her authority questioned, and the secular world, because the church refused to tolerate, let alone encourage, the sort of scientific thought that allows humans to discover that the earth revolves around the sun. You're all familiar with Galileo. The church's intolerance of this inquiring spirit forced the scientific thought to develop an anti-religious bias. This narrow-minded attitude caused many Christians to adopt a secular thought exclusively and to become convinced that God could be known only through reason and not through experience or dreams. As a result, people came to believe that while God worked in the past and spoke through prophets, he no longer speaks to us directly. So much for an introduction as to why we should take dreams seriously, and why Kelsey, who is an Episcopal priest and a Jungian analyst, has written this book, Dreams, A Way to Listen to God. This does not mean that every dream is a voice of God speaking to you, but if there is wisdom that you will get from the Holy Spirit, it would be through dreams. And that's what I'm talking about today. On the board, I have drawn again a more complex diagram of the psyche. And in a relation to the ego, here is the persona, which I forgot last time, which is the mask that we wear vis-a-vis the world. This is our consciousness. Can everybody see that? Maybe I should move this. This is the consciousness with which the world deals with us and we deal with the world. Then there's the region of the personal unconscious or the subconscious, our memory, all the stuff that we don't carry around all the time but that we can call up, including irregular verbs that we learned in school. And then there's the vast thing of the collective unconscious, according to Jung, in which the shadow, and this is just schematic, the shadow floats or resides. In other words, that side, the dark side, that we don't like to acknowledge. And the collective unconscious touches upon or can be penetrated by the spiritual reality, the Holy Spirit or God, because it is not bound by time. This is very schematic, and you see dreams come from this area. And depending how deep they are, you can see from this that they could touch the spiritual reality. But many dreams are merely a processing of what happened the day before. And the most important function of dreams, and you dream 5 to 7 times a night, is to keep you sane, to literally clear your mind like you clear an adding machine. Otherwise, you couldn't function the next day. You can go about 2 or 3 nights without sleep, without feeling the effects, maybe only 2. When people are awakened at the time of their eye movements, when they are known to be dreaming, or rapid eye movements, when they're awakened and not permitted to dream, after 2 or 3 days they begin to show bizarre behavior. So you see how important it is. Whether you remember them or not, that's beside the point, but you know that you dream about 5 times a night. And the dream that you're most likely to remember is the one at the very end of your sleep cycle when you're very close to waking up. Now, before I go into the question of how to remember a dream, I want to talk a little bit more about the theory behind all this and why dreams are so important, because as I showed here, they do touch on this non-rational entity, and we talked about that the other day as well. According to Jung, and according to the Bible, we have this treasure in earthen vessels, we have this self that is non-material, and in which the Holy Spirit resides. And when we are asleep to the world, we are most awake to God, because all the sense stimuli don't come in to interfere. Another way that we can get in touch with our collective unconscious is through active imagination and through prayer. But it takes, it's more a letting go and getting in touch with the deepest layers in ourselves. So I don't want to maintain that dreams are the only way, but somehow when we are not trying to do our own will, it's easier to listen. And when you have kept track of your dreams over a period of time, you begin to see that some of them speak with a great wisdom or warning or guidance. Guidance, wisdom, about the same. Any questions so far? I said active imagination, which is a form of meditation where you actively engage a dream figure or a dream symbol and do it. We'll do that next week. I'll talk about that. Any other questions? Am I going too fast? Or you still with me?
I just wanted to. Is it true that everybody dreams?
Yes, I think so. Even dogs and cats. I think it's a mechanism to keep our brain functioning. Now, the question of remembering dreams rests on the motivation to want to remember the dream and on your willingness to keep your eyes closed and listen or let the images rise as you first wake up, and then to quickly write, have something handy so you can write it down. Don't try to analyze it or anything, but you can just write it down, or Richard said he has a tape recorder and he just presses the button, he doesn't even open his eyes. The moment you open your eyes, of course, the sense stimuli come in, you think, oh, today's Wednesday, what do I have to do? Well, the dream has evaporated. Any other questions? Now, the messages that come from the unconscious are often clothed in what Jung called archetypes. And those symbols,
archetypes.
Are universal, and we find them also in myths, fairy tales. I'll name only a few. There's the great father, the great mother, the hero, the trickster. Trickster is another form of the devil, try to trick you. The wise old woman. Hetera, I don't know how to translate that. That's the opposite of the wise old woman, the kind of flippant young, flirtatious young maiden, the child, the king, the queen, the experience of death, the experience of birth. All these are archetypal, universal experiences. Each person dreams, experiences the archetypes in a unique personal way, so that what is the king or hero to me may not be the king and hero to you, or what is the great mother for me may not be the great mother to you, but the archetype is the same. A wise old woman, which is what I like to talk about, will appear in the guise of a woman that I rather admire and who is somewhat older than myself, and who will say things like, Emily, be yourself. I've had a dream where she comes around and says, Emily, be yourself, or Emily, do thus and so. The wise old man usually appears in my dreams as my pastor, who comes and gives me some fine advice, and I'll share with you in a few minutes my favorite dream. The child appears as my own children sometimes, or somebody else's child. And when I appear in a dream as a child, I have found it useful to go back and see what happened when I was that age. There seems to be sometimes an unresolved conflict that the dream constellates, we use the word constellates, brings up to consciousness so that you'll pay attention. So that I had several dreams of when I was 17 years old. At that time, I had a lot of turmoil. I left Austria and I came to London, and I was very unhappy. And there were some things I never resolved. And when it was pointed out to me that the story in the dream was less relevant than the fact that it dealt with me at age 17. A friend of mine just shared a dream with me of his high school days, and I just casually asked, well, what happened when you were in high school? What were you dealing with? And what he was dealing with was very relevant to what he's dealing with at the moment. So one rule of thumb is, if you dream of yourself at a different age, go back and see what happened to you in reality at that age. It has worked both in therapy and for myself. Let's see now. When you dream of somebody dying, which is always terrifying, that does not mean that you're dreaming of this, that tomorrow you'll wake up and the person will be dead. It usually means that a part of yourself needs to die so that what? Something new can grow. And that was very helpful for me to realize. If you dream of someone else dying, you have to figure out what this other person, what part of yourself this other person represents. Again, his or her death represents that part in yourself that needs to die so that something new can grow. When you dream of a house, by and large, it doesn't always mean this, but the house does stand for the psyche. So if you're on the ground floor, you're pretty much in reality. When you start going into the basement, you would be going into the unconscious. And Jung and Freud worked together, and Jung had several dreams about what he found in the basement, and he asked Freud to interpret it. But because he found skulls and things, Freud interpreted typically as a death wish. But Jung felt that he was going to a deeper layer, and that's when he developed the archetypal theory and said that he was going to, I can't remember how he phrased it, primitive archaeological excavations. But by and large, a house is the psyche. Going down means going into your unconscious. Going up means becoming more and more conscious. The ocean or water, by and large, represents the unconscious. If you are swimming in the ocean and drowning, I would say that you're pretty anxious and in a pretty dire straits, and it's a warning. If you're sailing on the ocean and the breeze is fine and everything, that seems like you're really going, you're able to, you're on the surface of the unconscious. You're in a good place, as they say. When you're traveling, well, let me finish about water. If the water is clear, it's usually a better sign than if the water is dirty and murky. We don't have, as Jungians, we don't have fixed symbols, and they're not tinged with the sexual meaning as Freud's symbols are. You're probably aware that for Freud, every tower represents a phallus, every cave represents a womb. That is not true for Jungians. The symbol has to click for you personally, and a cave for a spelunker would mean something very different, obviously. That's very important to remember, that the symbols have to be worked through between you and a friend, between yourself and your own experience of working with dreams or with a therapist, depending on where you're at. When you're traveling, the mode of transportation is important. I think I mentioned the term individuation, the path that you go through life. And when you're traveling in a dream, it often depicts what kind, where you're at. Whether it's a smooth road, whether you're climbing a mountain and getting exhausted, whether you're going too fast downhill. I had a wonderful dream once when I was riding a bicycle downhill at a speed that, you know, just thrown me. And indeed, I was just going too fast. The message was basically, be careful and slow down. If you're traveling in a train or a boat or an airplane, you're being transported. It's a passive way of traveling. If you're bicycling or walking, you're actively moving. So that's interesting to look at as well. Again, when you're ready to go on a journey and you dream of missing your train, it is one of the most common anxiety, pre-trip anxiety dreams. And I had about 3 missing the train connection dreams, even though I was driving. If your car crashes or you have an accident, it may be similar to the death experience. It may be that you're just going in the wrong direction and need to be careful what you're doing. It does not mean that you're going to have this accident. Unless you're blessed with a special gift of ESP, and there are people, and you've heard them all, I'm sure, who wake up at 3 at night and have this dream that something terrible has happened or somebody has died, and sure enough, the next morning they get a telegram that somebody died at 3 o'clock. But that is very rare. But it is a special gift, and it does occur. That's another evidence, of course. Well, th- there must be some questions at this point.
What about falling?
Yes.
Where if you dream,
yes, falling
before you land.
Yes, it's a very common and typical dream of adolescence. The body's going through immense changes, and I think it has something about, says something about the vascular system that or developing sexuality, I don't know. But the fear of falling is also the most basic fear that babies have. It's interesting that most people wake up before they land, but it's that strange feeling. It is very common, typical, and it's tinged with anxiety. Another anxiety dream would be when the house or something burns, depending on what it is that burns up. You can see it as anxiety or as something that needs again to be left aside, burned up, literally part of your life. Throughout life, we have to shed things and let new things grow. If we stay too rigid in one mode of adjustment, we become stale. And I think it's the greatest challenge for when we retire to find those hobbies or those things that we have not had time for while we were working. And I find that one of the most exciting aspects of retirement myself. Any other questions?
What about an infant? Is that the same as a child also being a dreamer?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a younger child. But giving birth is a really archetypal dream. What is it you're giving birth to? Again, if you're 9.5 months pregnant, or 9 months pregnant, and you're dreaming of giving birth, that's processing, and it's your anxiety of the actual event. But if you're not pregnant and not expecting a child, you can still, and often will, dream of giving birth, and that is a psychic birth. Anyone else?
I'd like to ask, how has the identification of these symbols or association, is that determined on research with a lot of people, or how is that so definite?
Oh, well, Jung himself analyzed about 80,000 dreams. That's one aspect. And therapists psychologists have over the years studied dreams as well as tried to see whether these things hold up in their actual practice. And as I was telling you, that in my own experience, many of them have been validated. But because they're so individual, sometimes a specific symbol may mean something else for you than for someone else. It has to click. And because God works in mysterious ways and uses many paradoxical symbols, as I said earlier, when you dream of death, it may mean rebirth. And so you have to look at a series of dreams before you begin to really know what they're telling you. In a little while, I'd like you to, if you're willing, to take a dream and work with it individually. You don't have to share it with anyone. And I'll give you some guidelines as to how to do it. I first want to share with you the big dream that I had, 1964, I guess. I am a psychologist, and I've always enjoyed learning, and I love everything except housework. I hate cooking, can't cook, didn't know how to cook at all. I grew up, we had maids, I just didn't, what?
Chose not to learn.
I chose not to learn, and then, so anyhow, I was having a hard time, but I managed to get in there, hunched up shoulders, quick, throw something together. And I had this dream. My pastor came and took my hand, literally took my hand in the kitchen, and said, "You must work with love and thanksgiving." And he took my hand like this. I said, "Oh, thank you, this is the message I needed." I was already into dreams. So the next morning, I got into the kitchen and I worked with love at Thanksgiving. It's taken me 14 years. It took me 14 years to slow down enough to really do it right, to follow recipes and so forth. I'm a fairly good cook now. But to just show you, that's my favorite story on dreams. So we must not jump to conclusions either. So, as I said earlier, the pastor stands for the person who gives me a vital message. Any questions?
Is there an explanation of why a certain percentage of people rarely remember the dreams and others are apt to remember them frequently?
Several things. I think that people who don't remember dreams are very busy in the world and content, perhaps, or well-adjusted, well-adjusted means that people remember their dreams or not. That's one. They're busy and don't take the time and don't feel the need to remember them. They may also have a different kind of memory, because we do know that people have incredibly different kinds of memories, that people's dreams are sometimes more visual, and they can reconstruct a whole story, and others are just a little fragment. I don't think there's a value judgment. I just think that when you want to remember dreams, you will at least remember a fragment or two. It doesn't have to be a whole scenario. But if you have a dream that is a whole story, then you can look at it like you look at a theater piece.
Then if one is making an effort to remember dreams, then that person probably should concentrate before going to sleep.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes, thank you for mentioning that. Yeah. When you could suggest to yourself before you go to sleep, I really want to remember the dream tomorrow, and you probably will. The interesting thing is I've done this at Holden several times, and after the second or third lecture, I'm bombarded with people who've had these dreams, and we start having special times talking about them. But I think that you can learn to look at them yourself, and I have some suggestions in this book that help you deal with them. Rules guiding the interpretation. The first thing, if you're serious about it, you should write a little note to yourself as to what happened during the day. What happened in your conscious life is quite important. Let's say you've been to a big banquet or a ball, or you've been to Holden, whatever. Let's say you dream about Holden at Holden would mean very different things than if you dream about Holden back home. The dream is also compensatory, meaning it compensates for your conscious situation. That's one of the nicest things about dreams, big or little, that if you're in a bad, conflicted place, you may have a dream of happiness and beauty, Holden, hilarity, joy, and you might be in a very happy place and have a terrible dream, very frightening. It's this kind of compensation. That doesn't mean that the frightening dream is telling you that something terrible is happening. It simply means that your conscious situation is so balanced that you can deal with some of the conflicts arising or darkness that's arising out of your unconscious. Because there always is a lot of darkness that needs to be transformed. Another function of dreams is that it transforms your energy. If you will learn to listen to them, they will give you material that you can work with so that you can transform conflict or fears or, well, transform your psychic energy into something constructive and creative. I should give you an example, but at the moment it escapes me. The second thing about it is, as I said earlier, not just one dream, but a series. I had a dream where an old lady was unraveling a skein of wool that was a red wool, and she was handing it to me, and she said, "This is the red thread of your dreams." Well, again, I'm into dreams, so it's not surprising. She was a wise old woman, and I thought, well. And then I went over my dreams. I do it once a year. I go over all the dreams that I've kept for now 30 years. And suddenly, I see things. I see connections that are just astounding. Most lately, which is interesting, there are a series of dreams where I'm told to wait. To wait for the bus, to wait for this, to wait for that. And I noticed, dream after dream, I thought, what is it? Well, it's part of retirement and part of wait upon the Lord. Wait and don't rush into things, because I tend to be impulsive. So that was a message that I could use. Lots of messages to slow down. And early on, and I shared that with Richard, when I was getting my studying my graduate years and was trying to have a career, but was also trying to decide whether to get married, and I dreamt that I was swimming against the stream, and it was terribly difficult, and I was swimming and huffing and puffing, and then somebody said, well, why don't you turn around and swim with the stream, which I did, and I had an analyst, and we talked in depth about it, and it really meant that I could leave my academic studies and get married and raise a family. I'm glad I did. So, there can be life-changing things from just a little dream of swimming upstream and with the stream. Let's see. What other questions do you have about how to remember dreams or what to do with them? If you wish, we could. Would you like to take a dream of your own? That, how many of you can remember dreams? Are you? Well, most of you. Why don't those who can remember dreams write down a dream and do two things. Give it a title and see what the theme is. Or what is it speaking to you? And maybe take 5 minutes. Those who can't remember dreams, maybe we can come in this corner and we'll talk some more about specific dreams. Would that work for you? If you need paper, I have paper. I don't have a pencil though. And does anybody need paper? I only have one pen, I'm sorry, I should have brought a pencil here. And who else would you want to come and see?
That's okay.
We'll just talk about them. Those of you who don't want to or can't write. Have you had
I'm not terrible about remembering. Yeah, I do every now and then, but I've never had a recurring dream.
Oh yeah, I never talked about recurring dreams either. Recurring dreams are often those that looks like all people are all coming over here. Well, let's just continue talking. It looks like Russell went on a hike. Why? Well, have you had any dreams as a result of climbing the mountain? Too exhausted.
I can tell you about one though. It's just I sort of flitting from dream to dream. I remember totally different dreams, and all the time there was a woman following me, and she was never intimidating. I was never scared of it, uh-huh. But she was always there. She was always at a distance. She never spoke, but I knew she was there. That was kind of strange.
It's her great teacher.
Yeah. Well, here I'm not going to try to make any deep interpretation. I'm just going to say that what happens in dreams is always bizarre and strange, and therefore, Shakespeare said, we're the stuff that dreams are made of, you know. Anyone else want to share a dream?
Well, I remember some things about the dreams, and right. One of them is that they never seem to get anywhere. They just keep moving along, but there's never any plot.
Resolution.
And, sometimes the dreams sort of pick up where the last one left off. It goes on for several nights.
Yes.
The same environment, same conditions.
Uh-huh.
I keep working and never finish.
Right. I had a series of those dreams. It's sort of, when I was registering, Or when I work at St. Martin's, I'm at the cash register. I'm doing the cash register over and over and over. Or whatever it is, that is part of that processing of an experience. And if you could pin down the experience that you're processing, it might help, you see. If it's just vague, then it's just kind of a mechanical thing.
Sometimes they're very funny.
Uh-huh.
What awakened laughing out loud. That's a funny story.
Not so funny, right?
No, I'm not funny. Well, I must tell you a very funny thing. I had visited a friend. It's very similar to this one. I had just returned, so I didn't really know where I was. And I woke up like this, similar. And I asked my husband for a glass of water. And he handed me a glass of water, and I was in this half sleep. And I said, speaking in the sleep, I said, "You do it just like Mary does." And I dragged him on. He said, "But I'm not Mary, I'm your husband."
did you have a Mary in mind?
I had just come from Mary, you see.
Oh, you just come from Mary.
I wasn't sure
okay.
Where I was. Oh. Yeah. But that's sort of similar to that. That was not really much of a dream. So.
I'm sure all of you have lost things. Haven't you lost things and you worry about that? Mother visited me every winter in Texas. And she was out there helping me put some tomato plants in a little garden. Mm-hmm. And in the evening, she says, "You know, I've lost my wedding band. Her wedding ring had slipped off. Wonder where it could be. She washed dishes. We looked all over the house. And the wedding ring. She went to bed just really concerned about that. She felt bad that she had lost her wedding band. And then she dreamt. Towards morning, I think. She, mm-hmm. said, she got up and she said, "I had a dream so vivid. We're planting those tomato plants. That's where my ring." She went out.
Wonderful. The most famous dream of this is the chemist, his name is Kekule, I think, and he dreamt that a snake was biting its tail, and as a result he woke up and he said, "Oh, that's the structure of the benzene ring," and indeed when he did it, that's a famous example that Jung gives in one of his books. But you see, the symbol was a snake biting its tail.
Yeah.
And while we're talking about snakes, snakes can be healing, our healing symbols, mm-hmm. like the...
Thank you. Yeah. A couple of questions. First one is that when my son was younger, he used to talk in his sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you would ask him, you know, why he said these things.
Mm-hmm.
Could he recall it? And he could not recall it, although he would make
When you are close to waking up, the vocal cords can get activated, and so what you're speaking in the dream can become vocal, so that the other person can hear it. But you have no memory for it because you're in the dream, and your mind is sort of like I don't know the terms, but it's like turned off.
Or are the people actually speaking in the dream?
Oh yeah, people speak in dreams. There are all these jokes about men who've spoken the name of somebody in dreams that they don't want their wives to hear. Those are times when you wake up and you're almost awake, but not quite. But it doesn't happen very often. Then there's, of course, was sleepwalking, which is a very different phenomenon. It has something to do with, it's not dreaming exactly, it's sleepwalking, and it's not a normal situation. It happens and can be quite dangerous.
I did that a lot when I was very ill. I can remember it though.
Really?
And I'd end up waking up behind the couch. Or mother would notice that I was moving around. And I was walking in my sleep, sure. I don't know how. Yeah. That was when a high fever, maybe.
High fever, yeah.
Yeah.
People sometimes say that you really don't have contact with the dead. But I recall I was about 16, I think, when I lost my mother. And my father wanted to go to Canada. He was a Lutheran minister, and he had some people of his family up there. And so we went to Winnipeg. And oh my, it was so different up there than what I was used to. And we had to observe holidays, which we didn't do in the United States, mm-hmm. that they do in Canada and everything. And I'll never forget this day. I had washed clothes, and of course my father had these collars, you know, or the shirts with no collars, you know, and he would change sometimes twice a day with these, and I had a whole long string of these lovely clean white shirts, and the string broke, you know, and here they went down in the mud, and it was just a terrible disaster for me. Well, my neighbor lady came over to help me redo it, and I said I couldn't put them out till the next day. But that night, I had a dream from my mother, and I could just see her face. Mm. And she just said for me not to get excited about that, you know, that was a very little thing in my life, you know. We have a lot bigger things coming. And I certainly did. But just as clear, but just her face, not her body.
Well, Jung has said that often we dream of people who died who come to comfort us, or to comfort us in the sense to say that they're okay. And several people have done research, but we don't know. This is a very difficult subject, because we do want to dream of the people. We do dream of the people we love, and they do appear in dreams. But often they come to comfort us, as they did in your case.
That's, by the way, that's good Lutheran theology.
Yes.
That people are still a part of our life and are part of Church Triumphant.
Thank you.
And that we do, can be in touch with, and we are in touch with those who have gone before us in memory. Mm-hmm. And we can even get introduced to those who have gone before us by becoming acquainted with them through reading about them or talking to someone else who has been listening. As far as the saints are concerned, we can become acquainted with those we did not know and never did know in physical life. It's a different way of thinking of history. I had a couple of dreams that were very vivid, three or four dreams actually, following the death of my wife in 1982. And one of the dreams was so vivid, I'm not even certain that it was a dream. Mm. Because I was sitting in the living room of my home with her following her death. It was about 2 weeks following her death. And we had a very vivid conversation that had to do with my plans to take a trip. Mm-hmm. And her countenance was different. I knew it was her, but she did not have a physical countenance like we would have. And her whole personality was changed in the sense that she wasn't worried now about things that she was worried about and concerned about. You know, so she was a wisdom person for
her. Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you.
And they're very, very reassuring in terms of things that I was planning to do about herself. One thing she was always concerned about, funds, and she says, I'm not worried about that now. And it seems to me you were telling me all through our relationship together that I shouldn't be worried about it. Why don't you take
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
It was so vivid that I'm not even sure that it was a vision or something.
Yeah. Well, he talks in this book of dreams and visions, and that the line between them is very, very thin. But it's good to hear that it ties in with good Lutheran theology. Thank you. If you would like, we can continue sharing. How are you doing on those who have written their dreams? Because I'll talk with you afterwards. How many of you did it? Okay, I'll talk with you afterwards, and we'll go into more depth about it. You can sit anywhere, just come and be more comfortable. I'd like to continue the sharing. What I'm doing is compressing what I was going to ask about. Start again. I'm compressing my talk so that we're doing dream sharing, which I had put on Saturday, today, so that you wouldn't have to miss anything. And then Saturday I'll start again on Paradox, because a whole new people will be here. I could not change and do it tomorrow because the schedule is set. You know, when something is set in stone, even at Holden or on the bulletin board, you don't change. There are certain reasons, because certain people leave and new people come in. So we have to keep by the schedule they set up. So I'm open for more dreams that people would like to share, or any other questions. Yes, Charlie.
Yeah, late at night, I was sitting down and my parents were asleep.
I couldn't hear what you said.
It was interesting. One night, I was sitting in my den at my parents' place, and all of a sudden my dad yelled out, "Get out of here!" That effect, and really loud. And I went in there and said, "You're right." I said, "Do you remember what you said?" And you remember thinking, it was right after that, right back to sleep, and just what happens in that sensation where somebody's coming out of their in the dream and just yelling?
Well, just as I said to this other gentleman, he was probably dreaming very strongly and saying this in his dream and actually activating his vocal cords. He was just, you know, very close to waking up, but not awake. I don't know any other explanation.
The same thing as a nightmare?
A nightmare.
What we think of as a nightmare,
yeah.
Someone
when you wake up, when you wake up with a pounding,
you're frightened,
yes, you're
frightened. Actually vocalizing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Excuse me, I'm standing. I can't talk too well. Sitting. Many years ago, soon after I got really involved in the Lutheran Church, I retired for the night, and anyone that studies in a dream, they know most of them happen very quickly.
Yeah.
Well. My wife says you can't have slept because you just hit the pillow. But I had to tell her the dream that I had in that moment. I was with a group of people, a large group of men. I say multitude is the scripture that said 300 or 400 people, and we were traveling toward a large white building, walking. But before that building was a moat, and across the moat was a very narrow bridge, and I was one of those who was able to get onto the bridge to walk across because I've never been a swimmer. But many of those who could not go on the bridge were jumping into the water to swim across, and many of those were not swimmers. But I jumped off the bridge into the water to help those people over to the other side. Mm-hmm. And after assisting about 3 of them over, 2 men appeared at the edge and reached down and said, all they said was, "He wants to see you." They lifted me from my car, led me up 2 flights of stairs, once you see it, to an upper flat area, and motioned for me to enter a room. I did so, and 3 persons were in there. The center person was Christ sitting on a chair, but I could not recall his face after that. Beside him were 2 men robed in white, which, after giving him thought later, that it had only been the same two that were living in the
transfiguration.
He called me by name. Marvin said, "You have given your time, you have given your talents, and you have given your treasure." And in a very sad voice, he said, "Why haven't you given yourself?" And with that, I turned and walked out of the room and as I got out through the door, I woke up. Now, for 25 years, that question has still been going through my mind. I've been asking myself, am I giving myself, or why haven't I given myself? And he was telling me something. And I think that just as dreams appeared to Joseph and to the people that we read of the Old Testament, if he wants to reach us today, he'll still do it that way. But that's one way he can do it, he will.
Thank you, Marvin. The most eloquent testimony of what I've been trying to say. That is beautiful. I would appreciate if you would write this out for me, if you wouldn't mind if I wrote it down. It's just such an eloquent thing.
Unusual, though.
Yeah.
I am a dreamer. I dream at night, every night.
Really?
All night. Yeah, most of my dreams, I don't remember them.
Yeah.
This one, I've never forgotten the details.
Yeah. Well, that's what we call a numinous big dream. Thank you very much. And I'm sure you've given a lot of yourself. Somehow the way you told the dream gave me that feeling. Silence is the only way we can respond to this one. We have about 10 more minutes.
Well, we dream a lot about things that we are really afraid of. When you mentioned snakes, I really grew up being frightened of snakes. And I used to have many dreams of snakes, and they were always a terrible enemy. And they're, you know, just the tallest of them, I still. So do we not dream of things? Is that just a natural fear?
Well, snakes is a natural fear, fear of snakes, but it's also a healing symbol. And it would depend on how the snakes appeared. I'm still with the dream that Marvin shared.
Yeah.
And I am reminded of the Transfiguration, and I think it is, shows that you're close to the scriptures. And I think we must recognize that some dreams are, you know, kind of run-of-the-mill, and others are really big ones that we will always remember. Just as I'll always remember the one about my pastor taking my hand in the kitchen. And I've had a few big ones as well, which I might share in the next session. Tomorrow I'd like to do some more of this, go into more depths about the archetypes and the symbols, and maybe have you bring dreams that you have at night, tonight. Yes.
Could I ask you a question? Earlier you referred to the fact that we should collect our thoughts for the day and record them before we go to sleep, and thus, as we interpreted our dreams, we would know what was leading up to them. Is that what you had in mind?
You said it a little differently, and that's fine. That would take a lot of... That's good to collect your thoughts. I think we should always kind of review our day, and it's part of our coming to terms with what happened during the day. What I was talking about more was just a short notation of what you did during the day, where you were at. I mean, whether you were, maybe your feelings or your actual place, especially when you're traveling. It makes a difference if you're up in the mountains or in a big city, because if you're dreaming, for example, of a lot of traffic and you're actually haven't been in traffic, it would not be processing, it would have a different meaning. If you're in a city and you're dreaming of being at Holden, it has a different meaning than if you're actually at Holden. So collecting your thoughts is a very good thing to do before you go to sleep, plus saying, I want to remember my dream. But for your dream interpretation, you simply say Holden or, and the date, the date. If you collect your dreams over a period of time, how do you do it?
Well, I was kind of moving in a different direction, but I usually just record them as a part of my daily journaling.
Uh-huh.
And I think you mentioned earlier, keeping my eyes closed just for a few minutes and then just kind of going over the dream, remembering certain things so that I can... once I've gone through it, then it's easier later on to write it down.
Exactly, yes. What was your other thought?
I won't forget. The thing I was talking about had to do with snakes and witches and darkness and evil and pursue and fear and all of these kind of things. And what's helpful, I think, at least I found it helpful, is to remember that I am continually held in the love and care and concern of Christ, that nothing can separate me from the love of God. I think that's true for all of us as Christians. And to maybe recall that, bring that back to mind on a regular basis, so that it becomes more and more possible for us to entertain those parts of ourselves which are fearsome and which are threatening, so that we can bring to our awareness that part of the shadow side of ourselves. And I think that it's it is in reality the fact that we have been saved through what God has done for us in Christ. We are God's children, and there's nothing that can take us, snatch us out of God's hand. But if I don't bring myself back to that, that understanding, that awareness, I'm going to begin to fear again. I'm going to begin to be threatened by those things which I will think can unnerve me or throw me off balance or destroy me. Or
well, the verse that comes to mind as you're speaking is, perfect love casts out all fear. But we, being earthen vessels, are prone to fear and are likely to have disturbing dreams. But when we collect our thoughts and center ourselves, and that's a good practice in general, on the love of Christ, those fears will diminish.
And doing that before going to sleep provides a kind of a milieu of love in which we will then...
But it doesn't guarantee that you might not have a frightening dream.
No, no.
But it won't frighten you. That's the thing. Yes, Mary.
I have two thoughts.
Yeah.
My response to that is that I think you're very lucky.
Yes.
For those of you who have that kind of faith, you can turn to that. For those of us who don't, there's another problem. And faith is a gift, and you're very lucky. My other thought was, I've experienced something I don't think is really a dream, but in a sort of half waking, half sleeping state, I've had these visions of kind of normal type times.
Oh, alright.
Whatever. I don't know where to come from or what to do with them or how to deal with them, because I've tried to draw them and sometimes I can't.
Thank you, Mary. She's just led into Friday's lecture. It's going to be on mandalas and healing symbols in dreams. And just briefly, the word mandala means a healing symbol or circle, and I will talk more about it. And drawing them, what you see in the dream, is one of the best ways of coming to terms with them.
Is that a dream, though? These things just sort of...
Well, they're probably active imagination. That's the other thing we'll talk about on Friday. Active imagination is a halfway between dreaming and being awake. You sort of suspend your reality sense and go into yourself. It is a deep meditation.
It's kind of the minute you become conscious that there are these images before your eyes, you wake up.
So it's probably a dream at the very moment, just before waking up. It's very hard to distinguish sometimes. Or just before going to sleep, sometimes I have these images before me. And I'll bring in the book on rose windows, which are all beautiful mandalas. Most stained glass windows are mandalas. And they represent that perfection that Christ speaks to us, and we in a small way can experience them again in dreams. So Friday I'll talk about healing symbols and mandalas. Thank you for leading me into that, and thank you for yours, and thank you for your testimony, and keep dreaming, and thank you for coming. And those of you who have written down a dream, I'll talk to you briefly.